You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, ChristianHumanist.org.
This is the last cowboy song, the end of 100-year wars. The voices sound sad as they're singing along, another piece of America's lost.
Welcome to another episode of the City of Man podcast. My name is Coyle Neal, and I am an associate professor of political science at Southwest Baptist University in Bolivar, Missouri. In today's episode, Danny Anderson, Michael Farmer, and I continue to talk about country music in the 1990s. In the first part of our discussion of the 1990s, we discussed the non-hat acts, or the people who didn't wear hats during their concerts. Today, we're going to get into a discussion of the hat acts. And now we join in with a conversation already in progress. So the if we have the non-hat acts, we also have the hat acts. Garth Brooks is their king. We've done a whole episode on him, so we won't talk about him. But I will say that Brooks is part of what's called the Class of 89. So in 1989, Garth Brooks, Clint Black, Travis Tritt, Alan Jackson, and Mary Chapin Carpenter launched their careers, and Taylor Swift was born that year, if that matters. It's also the year that Keith Whitley died, so it is a big year in country music. Between them, those artists, those five artists, not Taylor Swift, account for half of all number one albums in the first half of the 1990s. In 1991, there was only 1 week where Dolly Parton had the number one Billboard chart album. The other 51 weeks of 1991 were either Clint Black or Garth Brooks. Clint Black was born in New Jersey, but his family moved to Houston when he was an infant. He taught himself to play harmonica before he turned 13, and then started writing songs at 14. Wikipedia tells me that his family would host neighborhood barbecues where they would invite neighbors to hear the Black kids sing and play, and sometimes they'd have up to 70 people there. Black dropped out of high school and started playing in nightclubs in Houston and Galveston, where ZZ Top's manager heard him in a club, got him a contract with RCA, and in 1989, his debut album, Killin' Time, went platinum and had four number one singles on it. 1990, his album Put Yourself in My Shoes did even better and made it into the top 20 of the pop charts also. And frankly, I think his music is just fun. Put Yourself in My Shoes, Burn One Down, Good Run of Bad Luck. I mean, they're great songs and worth listening to. And I actually really enjoy his acoustic album called Delectrified. With a lot of his hits that are stripped down, they're still glossy. I mean, it's still a professionally recorded album, but they don't have quite the same sheen on them that the electric stuff does. And it's still good music, despite the lack of that full-on studio gloss. Anything you guys want to add about Clint Black?
Love Clint Black. My favorite is When My Ship Comes In. Do you know that
one? Yeah, it's a great one.
No sun on the Rockies, not even the light of day. I feel that old cabin fever coming on, but I know where I'll be when Lady Luck finally blows my way. She'll put the wind in my sails and I'll be gone. It won't be long before my ship comes in. Gonna sail right out of Colorado, catch a ride on a warm trade wind to Puerto no one knows. She'll find me waiting when my ship comes in. Gonna board and go whichever way the wind blows. I'll be off to find myself once again in Puerto no one knows. When my ship comes in.
Yeah, that's a great song, and he really sings it well. I don't know how much of his stuff he writes versus just like his producer picking good songs for him, but certainly his producer picks good songs for him. Yeah. Have you heard the terrible schmaltzy baroque pop number he does with his wife, Lisa Hartman.
Oh, yeah, gosh, what is that
When
called?
I Said I Do.
These times are trouble, and these times are good, and they're always gonna be. They rise and they fall. We take them all the way that we should, together, you and me, forsaking them all. Deep in the night and by the light of day, it always looks the same. True love always does. And here by your side, we're a million miles away. Nothing's ever gonna change the way I feel. The way it is the way that it was. When I said I do, I meant that I will. Till the end of all.
Yeah, his duets struggle sometimes to be good.
But I do feel like he's another one of these performers who would have been successful in almost any era of country music, right? And he might have made it later because he's that good-looking guy too, right? Yeah. And so,
Is he good-looking?
I think so. He's got this he's got these cool squinty eyes, and no, I think for I think Clint Black's great. I actually saw when I lived in New York City. I saw him recording a music video in a subway station, I think at Times Square. And with, I just walked by and looked, there's Clint Black, like, pretending to sing. And there's, like, this, I don't know, this like, Peruvian band or something as his backup band or something. And I don't even remember what song it was for, but it was pretty cool to see Clint Black record a video in person. I like him.
He was also in the movie Maverick as one of the gamblers who got caught cheating and chucked overboard. Yeah, that's again, Clint Black. He's a great musician. Someone who I agree with Michael. I don't know if he wrote his own music or if his producer picked it. Although I think, if I remember right, he got involved in a lawsuit with his producer, where the producer was taking a bigger cut or too big of a cut, or Black said it was too big of a cut or something. They kind of dipped into his popularity briefly because it's kind of seen as not cool to sue your own producer. But someone who does write most of his own music is Alan Jackson. Alan Jackson from Newman, Georgia, got his start working.
Noonan.
What's that?
Noonan. Two N's. Noonan.
Oh, did I misspell that? Noonan, Georgia. He got to start working in TNN's mailroom. Worked there for 4 years before he started cutting albums, and has just sunk himself deep into the Nashville sound and all of the traditional country tropes. Poverty continues to feature strongly in his songs, along with divorce and hard work, and other things you would expect to find in country music. And I think because of that, he's probably the strongest name who wears a hat of all of these guys. He is the one. If I had to pick one that, all right, I can never listen to anyone from the 90s again, it might be Alan Jackson. He has some great songs. Most of them he wrote himself. So Chattahoochee, Midnight in Montgomery, She's Got the Rhythm, I'd Love You All Over Again. I mean, we could just keep naming his great songs. You guys want to say anything about Alan Jackson?
We got to talk about Gone Country.
She only ages. She's
girl myself, grew up on Long Island. So she packs her bags to try her hand, says this might be my last chance. She's gone country, look at them boots. She's gone country, back to her roots. She's gone country, a new kind of suit. She's gone country, yes she comes.
Which is, I think, really the anthem of 1990s country music. And if you haven't heard that song in a while, go back and listen to it, because it's actually a super interesting song where he's talking about authenticity, essentially.
Yeah.
And how country music is not just for rural people, that in fact you can be raised in New York City and find something in your roots to connect to with country music. And he does all this. It's a philosophical statement, but it's also a really great song. So
yeah.
Gone Country.
Yeah, he's a great singer.
We can agree to ignore Where Were You When the World Stopped Turning.
We'll,
his 9/11 song.
Yeah, we'll get back to that. I would imagine our episode on 21st century country will have a significant chunk of it dedicated to 9/11 songs. There is a little bit of that in the 90s, and I should have put this in the outline. So Garth Brooks writes a song about the Oklahoma City bombing. It's called The Change, and I still don't know what I think about it. You know, almost 30 years later, I'm still sort of mixed thoughts on that, on the quality of that song. But it's not in the outline, so I'll skip over that.
Was he pro or against?
Yeah.
Can you imagine if in the middle of the 90s, Garth Brooks came out with a song in support of Timothy McVeigh? Just like full-throated support.
I mean, if any country music singer could have done that, I suppose it would have been Garth Brooks. I want to briefly mention Brooks and Dunn. They are part of the Line Dance revival that you mentioned, Danny, talking about Billy Ray Cyrus. Their song Boot Scootin' Boogie comes out roughly at the same time as Achy Breaky Heart. I think it's like a month later, and it gets used all of the time in line dancing and kind of shoots them into stardom. They become the best selling duo of the 1990s. I don't really have anything else to say about them, but I did want to be sure to mention them just because they are a big name from the 90s. You guys want to say anything about Brooks and Dunn?
In Akron, Ohio, the name of the country bar was Boot Scootin' Saloon, right? So yeah,
they're really pretty great.
Yeah.
I don't know how much Brooks and Dunn you've listened to, but their singles are pretty unimpeachable. My favorite is My Maria.
Surely hurts my eyes. I'm a lonely
I don't know which one of them sings. You know, they I can't tell them apart. But whoever Brooks. Sings has this Brooks. Amazing high falsetto part in that song. That I highly recommend that song.
I agree. They're great singers. Dunn, I think, does. I think you're right, Danny. Dunn does most of the singing, and Brooks is sort of the stage presence, and occasionally the harmony.
Yeah, he's the oh gosh, who's the guy with the clock?
Flava Flav.
He's the Flava Flav of Brooks and Dunn. Yeah.
His name is Kix, right?
Yeah, Kix yeah, Brooks. My parents were at the National Finals Rodeo in Vegas in the late 90s, and Brooks and Dunn were doing the national anthem, and they botched the words and got booed out of the arena.
That's for that audience, that's bad form.
Yeah, especially the words were on the screen. So, yeah. I want to mention Neil McCoy. This is the odd man out on the list. Hubert Neil McGoffey Jr., who uses the stage name Neil McCoy. Everyone else
good
that I'm,
Lord.
Yeah, well, all of the other performers I'm talking about, certainly in the top tier of the hat-wearing country singers, I think Neil McCoy is kind of a good representative of the average country singer of the 90s. He started out as an R&B singer. Won a contest in the early 80s that they gave him the chance to open for Charlie Pride. Charlie Pride really liked what he did, so McCoy spent the next decade opening for Charlie Pride. Launched his solo career in 1990. Over the next decade, his albums sold fine. He made a good living as a country singer. He had a handful of hit singles, and he lived kind of quietly and without scandal with his wife. He also integrated pop songs, doo-wop, calypso, and rap into his music, sometimes in the same song. If you've ever heard the song Hillbilly Rap, it is the Beverly Hillbillies anthem mashed up with the Banana Boat song done as a rap. So, I mean, it's just this crazy, crazy song.
A poor mountaineer barely kept his family fed. And then one day he was shooting at some food, and up through the ground come a bubbling crew. Bubbling crew.
And he got to, or had to, make a music video with Rob Schneider for his song Billy's Got His Beer Goggles On. So, again, just someone as an example of perfectly serviceable, perfectly competent singer. If you want not the best of 90s hat country, but someone who is kind of average 90s hat country, I think Neil McCoy is as good a name as any.
Is at the bar, he's been there all night. First 10 beers he's had since her goodbye. Hey! Hey! She left him broke in his new truck. He don't smoke, but he lights one up. Temporary fix for his heartache, he's hurting bad, but he's feeling great. He's on the dance floor yelling Freebird, singing off pitch, but he knows every word. Grabs him a girl and he holds on tight. He's chasing everything in sight. He'll fall apart. when he gets home. But right now his worries are gone. Life looks good, good, good. Billy's got his beer goggles on.
Do you guys want to say anything?
I don't remember that song, I'm glad to say. Or well, we already discussed how I didn't see any music videos.
Do you guys want to say anything at all about Neil McCoy?
I think he should have went by Hubert McGoffey. I think that would have been a better name.
John Michael Montgomery, if you want a singer to sort of sum up the best and the worst of 90s mainstream country music, it's John Michael Montgomery. He grew up in Kentucky singing with his brother Eddie Montgomery, who went on to form Montgomery Gentry. John Michael Montgomery had a number of hit albums and singles, but most of his success, I think, came from a coordinated release of his two songs, I Swear and I Can Love You Like That, with cover versions by All for One that made it pretty high up on the pop charts. Practically what this meant,
I remember that.
Is if you're, you know, kind of our age, if you were attending, you know, middle school or high school dances in the 1990s, regardless of where you were in the country, you were listening to and dancing to John Michael Montgomery's music. Brilliant, brilliant marketing stuff. I don't know what producer.
Who sang it better, Coyle?
Oh gosh. You know, if you stripped out the music, like the instruments, and just had them singing side by side, I'd probably struggle to tell you which one was which. Not because they sound the same, but because they're both kind of non-entities musically, like vocally. But if I have to pick one, I don't know, John Michael Montgomery, I guess.
They read you Cinderella, you hoped it would come true, that one day your Prince Charming would come rescue you. You like romantic movies, you never will forget the way you felt when Romeo kissed Juliet. All this time that you've been waiting, you don't have to wait no more. I can love you like that. I would make you my world, move heaven and earth if you were my girl. I will give you my heart, be all that you need, show you your everything that's precious to me. If you give me a chance, I can love you like that.
Think what's the right answer, Michael?
I knew the John Michael Montgomery one well before I knew the All for One one, so I've always thought of the All for One version as a cover of the John Michael Montgomery.
Sure.
I don't know. All for One, for our listeners who don't remember them, are like an imperfect photocopy of Boys to Men.
Yeah,
that's fair.
With all that that entails.
And I know of Boys to Men, but that wasn't my music scene in the 90s, so I couldn't. I have no thoughts on that or on All for One. So
I was hoping we'd do a 10-part series on New Jack Swing next, Cole. That's disappointing.
And isn't John Michael Montgomery kind of an imperfect imitation of Garth Brooks in a lot of ways? I mean, I just kind of feel like...
I mean, any...
My sister was so into John Michael Montgomery. I don't know that she's going to love me saying this, but then again, she'll probably never hear it. She's super into John Michael Montgomery. And part of it is that he was very handsome, right?
I mean, I don't know. I think any hat act in the 90s is going to be an imperfect imitation of Garth Brooks to some extent.
Good point.
Because, you know, who else are you going to imitate? You're not going to imitate Neil McCoy. Finally, the person that I assume, based on earlier episodes, that Danny and Michael are going to tell me is the worst person on the list. Maybe not worse than Aaron Tippin. I don't know. We could argue about that. Tim McGraw.
More influential than Aaron Tippin, and therefore worse.
So McGraw came on the scene with controversy with the release of his first major hit, Indian Outlaw.
She's a Chippewa, she's a one of a kind. All my friends call me Bear Claw. The village chicken is my pawpaw. He gets his orders from my mama. She makes him walk the line. You can find me in my wigwam. I'll be beating on my tom-tom. Pull out the pipe and smoke you some. Hey, and pass it around. Cause I'm an Indian outlaw. Half Cherokee and Choctaw, my baby, she's a Chippewa, she's a one of a kind.
A big question that people were asking then is this song racist? And when I say people were asking, I mean mostly affluent white liberals in the cities were asking that. I think I've said this before on here. This was immensely popular where I grew up on the reservation that I grew up on. I don't know that it would be today, but it was in 1995. And of course, controversy meant more people listened to it, more albums were sold. He followed that up with, I think, the just god-awful song, Don't Take the Girl.
Johnny's daddy was taking him fishing when he was 8 years old. A little girl came through the front gate holding a fishing pole. His dad looked down and smiled, said, "We can't leave her behind. Son, I know you don't want her to go, but someday you'll change your mind." And Johnny said, "Take Jimmy Johnson, take Tommy Thompson, take my best friend Bo, take anybody that you want, as long as she don't go, take any boy in the world. Daddy, please don't take the girl."
Oh, country music at its sentimental worst.
Yeah, it was a hit. It sold really well, played on the radio all the time. But even in the 90s, I hated that song so much. And from that, he was off and running as a pretty solid hat country singer. So if you ignore those first two hits, he's kind of everyone else on this list. decent singer, has kind of solidly country songs. I Like It, I Love It is one of his kind of standards. And then he covered some Bob Wills music for a compilation album that Asleep at the Wheel put together. He covered Milk Cow Blues.
Yeah. Oh, Larry. Oh. Tim, come on, tell him now.
I woke up this morning. Looked out my door.
Yeah.
I could tell my old milk cow. I could tell by the way she looked.
Tell it.
If you see my milk cow, please drive her on home.
Put her in low and drive.
Zane had no milk and butter since my milk cow been gone.
Oh, I know what you're talking. Let me tell you.
Well, you gotta treat me right, boy. Day by day, get out your little prayer book, get down on your knees and pray. You're gonna need,
oh, yeah,
you're gonna need my help one of these days.
Oh, tell it like it is, man. Tell it like it is.
You're gonna be sorry you treated me this way.
Oh, Tommy Olsen, come right in here.
Again, putting him fairly solidly in kind of the standard hat country tradition. Again, if that distinction matters. All right, guys, unload on Tim McGraw. Let him have it.
It's not just hat country, Coyle. It's leather hat country. Don't forget about that.
Leather hat and the what are those called? The t-shirt, the tank top. All right, the white tank top.
Yeah.
The V-neck tank top.
Yeah.
What percentage of his audience do you think was women? And I don't say that just to cast aspersions on things women like, but I don't know a lot of men who were super into Tim McGraw.
No, they were all into Faith Hill, right?
Yeah.
And so,
Well, Faith Hill is one of the most beautiful women of the 1990s. I guess
totally
Tim McGraw
true.
Is good looking too.
But if you look at the video for Indian Outlaw, which is a dreadful song, whether or not it's offensive, it is like embarrassingly bad.
Awful.
I kind of thought it would be funny if Elizabeth Warren had played that like during campaign rallies. But
that would require her having a sense of humor about herself.
That's true. Oh, man. The hate mail is going to come in now. But he was really sketchy looking in that video. He just looks like this, like I don't know, this dude who you'd see a Dollar General like, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I mean, he had a mullet in that, right? Like,
yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen it, but I'm pretty sure he had a mullet in the leather hat. And
he didn't get into physical fitness until after that video, that's for sure.
Oh, man, that song. I think in an earlier episode, I named that the worst song in country music history.
I believe you.
Yeah, and I don't know that I find it any more terrible than Kalijah, which I think is, you know, they're fine enough songs. But I'm also not very easily offended, so I'm probably not a good metric there.
Let me explain something. Indian Outlaw is not terrible because it's offensive, although, you know, what do I know? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. You say it was popular on the reservation, I'll take your word for it. It's terrible because it's a terrible song. It's garbage.
It is really bad. It's like they took magnetic poetry themed about reservation life and he just, like, made rhymes out of it or sort of.
That's the worst thing the white man has done to the Indians ever.
I do not promise to edit that out.
Edit that out and put this in instead. That song is a buffalo carcass rotting in the sun.
I don't promise to edit anything. I like the magnetic poetry analogy. It's because it's not just magnetic poetry about reservations. It's about it's a magnetic poetry song about the stereotype of Indians pre-reservation.
Yes, right. That's even better.
Right. Like, oh, man. And it's not clever or funny or interesting. Like, it's just a stupid song. that has a big hook, and so people remember it.
Right.
It's the firework of 1990s country music.
Another song whose music I will not clip in. That's enough for Hat Country. Later, Brad Paisley.
But before we move on from Tim McGraw, sure. I've said that he was worse because he's more influential, and I stand by that. I stole this insight from my wife, but Tim McGraw really is the progenitor of bro country.
Yeah,
that's fair.
That's true.
So I think he has a lot to answer for when he dies and stands before the Almighty.
anyone that you guys want to add to this list of Hat Country people? Like I said, Brad Paisley and Toby Heath certainly fit into this, and they do both start in the 90s, but they don't really become prominent until the early 2000s, so I want to hold off on them.
I got three.
Sure.
Just real quick. Don't forget, John Anderson has a great 90s revival.
Yep.
And some really great – I mean, the opposite of Indian Outlaw, Seminole Wind.
Yes,
right?
Seminole Wind. Great song. Fantastic song.
John Anderson has a great 90s career as well that it was almost as good as his 70s, 80s career.
One thing about Seminole Wind is there are relatively few mainstream country songs about the environment in the way that song is without feeling preachy.
Yeah.
You feel that song is his lament about what's happening to an area of the country he loves. Given the conservatism of country music, you would think that there would be more of that sort of thing.
Sure.
And there's not. But man, that's a great song.
I'll defend my lowbrow tastes again. I love Seminole Wind. I'm not going after that. But I also really like his song Black Sheep.
My daddy was a brakeman on a highball traveling train. Mama, she raised four little children, and her family had a good name. And Papa and Mama wanted all for us they never had. Big brother, little brother, and sister too. None of them turned out half bad. Except me. I'm the black sheep of the family. Big brother went to college and became a doctor, man. I guess he makes about $1 million a year off of folks on insurance plan. He's got a big, long Mercedes Benz and a house overlooking the town. He sits in his jacuzzi and he watches the sun go down. And he feels real sorry for me.
black sheep of the family. Yeah, I drive me a big old semi truck. I'm making payments on a two room shack. My wife, she waits on tables, and at night she rubs my back. And I tell her what my papa said to my mama when he got off a highball train. Oh, wake me up early, be good to my dogs, and teach my children to pray.
Oh, that there's no bad John Anderson song. Black Sheep is fantastic.
Oh, Swingin'.
I love it.
There's a bad John Anderson song.
Swingin' is pretty bad.
Chocolate pie. Mama was in the kitchen cutting chicken up to fry. Daddy was in the backyard rolling up a garden hose. I was on the porch with Shawna feeling up down to my toes, and we were swinging.
Swinging.
Yes, we were swinging.
Swinging.
Little Shawna, she's a pretty.
Swinging is awesome. All the little details about Charlotte's Yard is just incredible. I love Swinging.
It's a
I love
terrible song.
Nobody sings like that guy. He has such a strange voice, and he knows exactly how to pick the songs that'll work for it.
Yeah. Yes, he's the best. I love John Anderson. Another one I think that kind of really is really idiosyncratic to this era, though, is Mark Chestnut. Who had a number of like real good hits, and he's just a real low key dude doing solid songs. I like Mark Chestnut a lot, and so I would add him to that. And I just got to make a recommendation because nobody in the world knows about this guy, but he's been around since the early 90s. A guy named Chris Wall, W-A-L-L, and like starting in the early 90s, he's a former ranch hand who writes really incredible poetry, right? And his career is great. And some of his best albums don't really take place until like the 2000s. He's got an album in 2002 called Just Another Place that I think is fantastic. Just really, I mean, intricate and clever lyrics. And then El Western Motel from 2012 is great, but he got his start in the early 90s. Cowboy Nation from 94 is a really great album. I love Chris Wall, and I think it's one of the tragedies of the 90s that he was kind of left behind, because he's an incredible talent that nobody knows about.
I've never heard of him.
Yeah.
Michael, anyone you would add?
No, not that I could think of, since Danny caught John Anderson, who was my first favorite singer.
No, we had talked about him in the 80s episode, but I'm glad we brought him up again because he is fantastic. I love John Anderson.
I feel like people don't really remember him, but seriously, go listen to Seminole Wind. It's as good a song as you could have heard on country radio in the 90s.
Yeah.
Well, listeners, that's a good place to stop because, once again, our discussion goes on long. So tune in for one more episode on 1990s country music. In the next episode, we will be talking about women in the 90s. This is the City of Man podcast, a part of the Christian Humanist Radio Network. Our press liaison is Kristen Filippic. Please check out other podcasts in the family. Get more information at our own show at christianhumanist.org. Please also leave us a review on iTunes, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/cityofmanpodcast, or send me an email at cityofmanpodcast@gmail.com. This is Coyle Neal. Let me remind you to render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's, and render unto God those things that are God's.
The end of 100-year wars. The voices sound sad as they're singing along. Another piece of America's lost.